south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, today if you hear some construction or some hammering going on, I'm an expat Eddie's neck of the woods, and there's some construction going on in his colony. And remember, when I say colony, I'm not talking about ants. Down here in Latin America, a neighborhood is not called a neighborhood. It's called a colony. Or in Spanish, very similar, colonia. And you know, I'm forever talking about this huge construction bubble down here in Latin America. And yes, it's out of control and growing by leaps and bounds. So when's it going to pop? Well, it's kind of popping already. It's a terrific renter's market off the Gringo Tourist Trail anyway. There's just so many vacant, brand new properties and houses and unfinished projects, you just can't believe it. In fact, the locals, it doesn't matter what class they are either, are so oblivious as to the fact that there's a bubble going on. Nearly everyone who you talk to who's got a job has two goals in mind. To move on up by first buying a nice SUV, because you know down here you are what you drive. Whether you can keep up the payments or even afford the gas or not. And that second goal, or meta, M-E-T-A as they call it in Spanish, for every Latin person who's got a job, building a new house for themselves somewhere in the burbs. Yes, down here in Latin America, because of that lag time effect, the burbs are all the rage. Though there have been small attempts to revitalize the central districts of big cities that have some colonial structures in them yet. And I mean colonial, not as in colony or neighborhood. I mean colonial, as in Spanish colonial-style architecture. So there have been some attempts in all big Latin cities to gentrify some of the run-down old colonial neighborhoods, but so far with very limited success. Whereas in the real historic districts, where they've got the original cathedrals and old Spanish forts, etc., those places have all had a certain trickle of tourists, even where you wouldn't expect well off the tourist trail. I can only say that the tourism involved there is basically Latin tourists and the occasional scruffy European or American backpacker. Oh, and let's not forget those tall, waspy, kumbaya church groups, those do-gooders that come down from the States to build toilets and cisterns for Jesus. I mean, let's face it, they got to do something when they come back to the big city for the weekend, don't they? So anyway, today I'm in Expat Eddie's Colonia, or neighborhood. And within 2 minutes of his spread, there are like three new houses going up. And I'm talking about upper middle class houses here that probably would go for about $500,000 or $600,000 in the suburbs of Chicago. Though I may be way off on that since I haven't been back to Chicago for a couple of decades now. Let's just say we're talking about houses that are on maybe a half an acre and at least 3,500 to 4,000 square feet. That said, speaking of construction, the other day I was talking to one of my new expat friends, a lady, a gringa, that came to one of my expat wisdom seminars and now lives in Central America permanently. Yep, she made the plunge all alone. Very brave of her, right? So let that be an example to all you gringas up there in Cleveland who are sitting on the fence. Anyway, she ended up renting an apartment in a very, very nice guarded residential tower for, I think, $600 or $700 a month, whatever. And she pointed something out to me that has crossed my mind many times, but maybe I haven't mentioned it yet. Oh, maybe I have. That is, very few houses and apartments, even upscale houses and apartments, come with a bathtub, which is called a Tina down here. T-I-N-A, just like the woman's name, Tina. That's a bathtub. And no, this fresh gringa expat we're talking about, her name is not Tina. So let's not confuse that. Now, maybe I did mention this point in my first 100 shows. Can't remember. That is, even though most people, first world gringos anyway, don't care to take too many baths anymore. Everybody's into showers, you know, get it over quickly. Rush, rush, rush. Takes time to draw the water, right? Just remember, there will be times, especially as you get older, you'll be thankful you have a real bathtub or Tina. So obviously, if you're going to build a house, which I don't recommend in this big boom bubble, or you rent an apartment or a house, chances are, unless you're going to rent a very big, spacious apartment with 3 or 4 bedrooms or more, or a house that's got maybe 3,000 square foot or more, Most of the time, you can count on the fact that it won't have a bathtub. Now, it might have 4 or 5 bathrooms, all nicely equipped with showers, but somehow the bathtub thing only seems to happen once in a while. In fact, now that I think of it, I've been in houses that have 5, even 6 bathrooms that don't have a bathtub. And sure, they sell them down here all right. They're in every hardware store. And in all colors and flavors, including baby poop yellow and military vomit green. Which, by the way, are 2 very popular Latin wall coloring schemes. If you think your Grandma Gertrude or Aunt Dolores have bad taste, you ain't been down to Latin America yet. And expat Eddie says, and by the way, he's in the other room. He doesn't want to come on the air. And why is that, you might ask? Well, it's not because he's shy. He just is a very, very low-profile guy. 3 cheers for Eddie, huh? Remember, he's the guy who always has a roll of happy face stickers in his car, and when he sees a camera, like the ones in upscale parking lots where you press a button and you get the ticket and the gate goes up, he's the guy who, every time he can get away with it, leaves one of those stickers behind, on the camera lens. He does it with bank drive-up windows and elevator cameras, too. So, if you see a camera with a happy face sticker over it, if you're down here, it was Eddie. If you're in Cleveland, it was a copycat. Anyway, he's got his own ideas why people don't have bathtubs in their houses. Even some of the wealthiest people don't have bathtubs. He says it's not because they're in a hurry like first world people. I mean, this is Latin America. Come on, mañana time prevails, even with the wealthy. Which is again why so many first world gringos are successful. When we start businesses, we don't operate them on mañana time. We operate them on real time, first world time. I mean, come on, whose paint and hobby store are you going to frequent? The gringo-owned one that opens at 9 because it says it opens at 9 on the door? Or the one down the street owned by a Latin? The scruffier, dingier-looking one that opens at 9:30 even though the sign on the door says it opens at 9? Now, don't think I'm stretching the point here. You can go to any big Latin shopping center, even in high-end malls, and see workers, even owners, strolling in, unlocking the front doors of their businesses in the morning, 5, 10, 20, 30, even 45 minutes, past the opening time that's printed right on the door. Now, you won't see gringo business owners doing that, unless they had an emergency or a car accident or something. Though I have to admit, many, many gringos I know anyway, including myself, over the years we lose that snap your finger, gotta do this right now attitude that we had when we first came down here. After a while, you do see that happen with gringos, and we probably live longer for it. Over the years, we may have our edges rounded off a bit, though we always still maintain an edge. It's simply like one expat put it, no matter how clean you are, when you're swimming in the toilet, you're gonna get some shit on you. Oh, what's that got to do with anything? Well, like Eddie says, as far as tinas or bathtubs go, when you happen to be at someone's house who does have a tina, you know, at a party or whatever, and you gotta use the bathroom, notice that all the tinas down here in Latin America, unless they're brand new, are always pretty disgusting and scummed up with scale and buildup. Even though these people have 24/7 cleaning ladies, they just can't or don't know how to get the scum off the bathtub. You know, the lime and the scale. In fact, down here they call it saro, like sorrow, you know, sorrowful. It's not spelled that way, but it sounds just like sorrow. So if someone says, my bathtub or kitchen sink has saro, it's not that there's anything sad about it. Well, I take that back. Maybe it is pretty sad. That just means it's loaded with scale and scum. Now, I know I'm getting off the subject quite a bit here now, but let me give you a little tip. You know how I and so many other expat gringos handle that situation? And you know, with all the volcanic soil down here, the water is terribly hard. So you're gonna get scummed up sinks and drains whether you like it or not. Unless you get something like a Culligan water softener, and I know they exist, you can get them down here, because I've seen those big resin exchange tanks at pool supply stores, but I've never seen one installed in a house. How do you like that? So how do expats handle that thick scum that builds up on the sinks and fixtures? Well, they could do like so many Latins, even the richest ones, meaning nothing. Let it build up like stalactites and stalagmites. Until they get so heavy and thick they break off on their own accord. Or you can just hand your maintenance guy or your cleaning lady one of those Schick or Gillette square safety razor blades. You can buy them at pretty much any hardware store. So then you'll have to give a little demonstration to your cleaning lady or maintenance guy. You show them how to get the crud off and they'll follow your lead. So then if you set him or her on the job, let's say every 6 months, you'll have really nice looking sinks, drains, and bathtubs. And if you're thinking, well, I could just go out and buy some of that scum away crap or whatever, that stuff might have some use up in Cleveland, but down here, forget about it. That would be kind of like trying to wash your car with a squirt gun and a box of Kleenex. And believe me, down here, everybody's got a box or two or three of some kind of scum off gathering dust under the kitchen or bathroom cabinet. Oh, there's a huge market for that stuff, all right, but none of it works. But where were we? Oh, yeah. Expat Eddie says, in a way, it's a very good thing that most Latins don't have tinas. Bathtubs, that is. Not just because of the scum buildup. Can you guess? Well, for one thing, if you're taking your water directly from the municipality, there are times when the pressure's so low it'd take you 6 hours to fill the damn thing up. Number two, the lower classes and half of the middle class people in Latin America don't have hot running water in their house. Oh, they'll have one of those point-of-use hot water shower head heaters that we talked about in a past show, but they don't, repeat, they don't have a whole house hot water heater, which you'll need if you're going to fill up a bathtub, unless you don't mind cold water baths. And to me, that's roughing it. Here's a statistic for you. Did you know that less than 5% of Latin American homes have central hot water? So do look out for that when you rent or buy. Aside from that, like Expat Eddie says, if you're a first world person and you're used to taking a bath once in a while, and of course many ladies are fond of them, if you do have a house or an apartment with a bathtub, you might just swear off on the idea the first time you try it. Why? Well, about 80% of the tap water down here, and probably all of it coming from the municipality, is not at all what you'd call clear, clean, colorless water. So once you've filled up your bathtub and it looks like grandma's chicken broth soup, you want to get in it? Which is why, again, so many of us expats install a big canister whole house filter on the main cold water line running into our houses, which really will get rid of a lot of that problem. You just use a 20-micron filter, and you'll probably have to change that thing about every 4 to 6 months. You can just go to the local pool supply outfit and get one of those big, tall, plastic canister filters, about 2 foot high, and the canister screws off, and you shove the filter in. The cost, about $30 to $50 down here. It's a one-time expense. And the filters, a 20-micron filter now, don't get a higher micron rate because gunk will get through, and don't get a lower one because it'll clog up much faster. Anyway, one of those will cost you about $10. Now, I always recommend one of those whole house filters because who knows what kind of junk and particles are going to come through anyway. And what I found is if you don't have one of those filters, after about 6 months, even in a new house, all the little strainers on your kitchen and bathroom sinks get clogged. Not to mention, there's always a little strainer in the line to your washing machine. So, whether you know it or not, those things will eventually clog up with particles and sand and rust and stuff. And soon enough, you'll notice the water's flowing slower and slower. Now, of course, it's easy to clean those things. You know, you just unscrew the tip of your faucet and tap it out. And in the case of your washing machine, you've got to unscrew both lines, the hot and the cold water, and there'll be a tiny plastic basket filter, usually right where the hose screws to the machine. So, if you don't have a whole house filter, after you emptied one of those little screens in the faucet or the washing machine, you certainly will think about getting one. Now get this, the local appliance repair guy once told me that he gets a lot of business from stupid rich people. Now, his definition of a rich guy is a little different than yours and mine. To him, a rich guy is someone who's got a washer and a dryer. So anyway, he says he loves those rich clients. They call him when their washing machines don't fill correctly anymore. And he says 90% of the time it's because the filter's clogged. Takes him 3 minutes to pull it out and clean it. And he says it's the fastest $10 that he ever makes. Now, there's more than one hidden message there. You get the filter part, right? But think about it. When's the last time you paid $10 for an appliance guy to make a house call? About 1962, right? So then the question is, should you get a bathtub? Well, yes, by all means. You never know when you're going to need one. Who can predict when Aunt Gertie with the double hip replacement is going to come down and stay at your house for a month? She's certainly not going to mess with the shower. She's going to want to hit the tina. I mean, bathtub. Oh, and one last thing about bathtubs. Almost no one has ceramic bathtubs down here anymore, just like they don't up in the States. Everybody's got some kind of plastic or plexiglass. So if you want ceramic or porcelain, you can get them, but you're going to pay through the nose for it. So anyway, now that we got Expat Eddie here in the other room anyway, it's kind of a lucky thing because a couple of days ago, I got an email from a guy asking me about liquor licenses. I mean, it does come up quite a bit, especially with expats who are starting brick-and-mortar businesses. They want to know if they start a hotel or a restaurant or even a bar, just what kind of BS they're going to have to go through to get a liquor license. And Expat Eddie was just the guy to ask. Why? Because he's got a lot of restaurants. So here's the scoop on that. If you happen to be on the gringo tourist trail, like Costa Rica and Panama and most of Mexico, or in Chile or Argentina or even Uruguay, which are very bureaucratic, inefficient, corrupt, heavy-handed governments now. Anyway, you can get liquor licenses quite easily, but they come with a lot of restrictions. Now, in general, there are three kind of liquor licenses. The first one is not really a liquor license at all. It's just permission to sell liquor out of a regular tienda or grocery store or whatever. When you get your so-called permit to open, which is called a sanitary license, you can automatically sell all that stuff. You don't need a separate liquor license. Now, I still don't know why they call it a sanitary license, though you have to post it in your business, and it says sanitary right on it. So, they may say it's a sanitary license, but there's nothing really sanitary about these places once they open. Just check out the bathroom sometime, you know? Anyway, when you get that general sanitary license, you can sell anything a little store sells, beer, wine, booze, except you're not supposed to open or drink this stuff in or on the premises. Now, note, when you're off the tourist trail, which is about 97% of Latin America, that drinking on the premises law might exist, but no one, I mean no one, enforces it. In fact, if you see any of the Shell or Texaco mini marts down here, for example, they all sell booze and beer, and you'll see outside, almost every night, people drinking on the premises, partying and hanging around their cars, you know, and no one does a thing. As long as they're not loud, boisterous, and crazy, the armed rent-a-cop they always have at these places just leaves them alone. Now, if you have a restaurant or a bar, hotel, bed and breakfast, whatever, obviously you want to be able to serve liquor there, so you'll want the liquor license with all the bells and whistles, right? Well, that too, when you're off the tourist trail, that is, might only run you $50 to $300, and that's it. However, if you're on the tourist trail, it could get political and then some. So what's that all about? Well, it's like this. Eddie told me of a case that he experienced directly. Turns out, the way these liquor laws are written, they always have some kind of a clause in them that says you can't serve liquor within 200, 300, or 500 meters, depending on the city and country, etc., from certain facilities, like a school, a church, a daycare center, hospital, etc. Note that down here in Latin America, 50 meters, or about 150 feet, is considered one city block. So if the restriction says no liquor served within 200 meters of a school, for example, that means four blocks. Now, as it turns out, even though those laws exist, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, the government issuing agency is never strict about it. In fact, they almost never bring it up at all. They just issue you your license and you've got it, especially if you're a gringo. However, like I said, when you're on the tourist trail, the gringo tourist trail or the Latin tourist trail, you know, the towns that Latins frequent on weekends for vacations, etc., oftentimes, like Eddie says, for any number of weird reasons, they just won't give you that license. Anyway, suppose you do decide to open a little restaurant and there's a school or church within the 200 or 500 meters, whatever. Eddie says the way it works is this. You go down to the municipality where they issue the license and you have a little meet. Now remember, we're talking about on the tourist trail here, and usually it's all about bribing the guy. Not much, in fact, you usually let your lawyer handle that stuff. Could be $200, $300, $400. Now remember, like I said, Eddie's been directly involved in these situations. And he also says that a long time ago he learned if you bring a very good-looking woman along with you when you have that little meeting, sometimes there's no bribe or extra expense at all. Only in Latin America, huh? Oh, and Eddie says the few times he's had to go to a meeting like that, you always walk in there as nice as can be, and you say to the corrupt, fat-ass, piece of government shit slug that's sitting behind that desk, to be sure that he and the wife and the family come in and have dinner and drinks during the grand opening on the house. And like Eddie says, he probably will stop in and take advantage of that, because, you see, those tin-plated bureaucratic slugs are all alike. They know they got that power of life and death over you for about 10 minutes, and they use it like all politicians do to extort favors, etc. But, like Eddie says, that rarely happens off the gringo tourist trail. Almost always, they're so glad to see a gringo set up shop that they bend over backwards and actually put your paperwork on the top of the pile. You've got that gringo advantage going again, and you get to take cuts. Just ask one of my new expat friends, Tom. He came down to one of my expat wisdom seminars, decided to move on down and get his residency, and he tells me every time he had to go to the immigration office to go through all the steps that you need to do to get those residency papers going, etc., he says, as soon as he walked in, and he's the tallest guy in the place, of course, they immediately take him by the hand and bring him up to the head of the line, in front of 50, even 100 people sometimes. People who've been waiting there for hours. So then you might ask, what about all those people he took cuts in front of? Did they get pissed off? Well, no, that's the amazing thing. They were very nice about it, like he was visiting royalty or something. It's that gringo advantage again. But remember, these days that kind of thing only happens when you're off the gringo tourist trail. So then, like expat Eddie says, things like that happen all the time when you're in business off the gringo tourist trail too. But if you try to do business on the gringo tourist trail, look out. Things like the following have been known to happen. Eddie knows a guy who's got a bar and restaurant business on a beach strip in Manuel Antonio, Costa Rica. And he said after the guy had been in business about 6 months, all of a sudden one day he got a knock on the door. There were some municipality officials there saying that they were going to close him down because he was within 500 meters of a church. A tiny little hole-in-the-wall evangelical church. A dumpy little house with crooked hand-painted letters on it. That, get this, wasn't even there when he opened up his bar business. Turns out, some local evangelical guy who called himself a prophet turned his own little hole-in-the-wall house into an evangelical church, and now Eddie's buddy was suddenly violating the 500-meter rule. So yes, they did shut down the business, and the guy's lawyer was able to get a hearing in 5 days, so they were closed for 5 days. In the end, get this, at the meeting, Eddie's buddy found out that this evangelical preacher started the whole thing because he filed a complaint on him. So then you got to wonder, how did this guy even know those zoning laws, that there was a restriction like that? So as it turns out, it was a legal extortion scheme. The gringo bar owner and his lawyer sat down with the municipality and the so-called evangelical prophet with the hole-in-the-wall church, and they all came to a dirty little arrangement where the gringo paid the guy off to drop the complaint. And of course, the gringo's lawyer was there to make it all legal so that the guy had no recourse to do it again. And of course, the petty bureaucrat in the municipality got a little cut too to permanently give the gringo a zoning waiver. What a scam, huh? Just know that's tourist trail stuff and rarely happens off the tourist trail. Let that be a lesson to all you folks out there. If your idea of the good life is to come down and hang with other expat gringos, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with that if you got some kind of fixed income coming in from the States, a pension, whatever, or a big savings account. But just don't think starting a business on the gringo tourist trail is anything but easy. The longer a place is thick with gringos, the more certain you can be the locals know all the angles and the scammers come out of the woodwork. Okay, that said, right now, let's talk a bit about my Expat Wisdom upcoming seminar in July 2015. I've got it all planned now and the dates are set. It's going to be July 11th, that's a Saturday, through July 16th, that's a Thursday. And the price of the seminar will include 6 nights at First World Hotels. Now, I mentioned an early bird special since we're some months away. So for all of you who've sent me emails wanting to get in on the early bird thing, I'm putting up the announcement and the complete details on expatwisdom.com, and I'll personally send you the link too, so expect that soon. So that said, for anyone who signs up before May 1st, there'll be a $500 discount. And if you come as a couple or two people double occupancy in the same hotel room, you'll get an additional $1,000 discount by signing up with that option. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com and click on the seminar link and you'll get all the details and all the price breaks, etc. But do remember, on May 1st, the prices go up by $500. So make your plans now. Oh, and by the way, I might not have told you this, but I've had at least 24 people take my seminars who are actually in the business of giving seminars themselves on whatever topic. Not expat seminars, of course. I'm talking about people who give finance seminars or self-help seminars, whatever. Not to mention, I've had quite a few people who've taken my seminars who call themselves seminar junkies. That is, people who take lots of seminars. In fact, I remember 2 or 3 people telling me they've taken at least 100 or more seminars. And the comment I overwhelmingly get from these people, the people who are in the seminar business themselves, and the so-called self-professed seminar junkies, They say my seminar is way too underpriced and that I give out way too much information, which I guess is good for you and not so good for me, right? That's why people say it's like drinking from a fire hose. So that said, just go to www.expatwisdom.com and click on the seminar link for all the information. But you might have to wait till Monday or Tuesday before it's on the site and posted. Oh, and one last thing. You know, these seminars I give can't last forever. Bureau rats up in the States are making it more difficult to lead. Little by little, they're closing the door on that. That's why at the seminar we talk a lot about getting temporary residency, then permanent residency leading to a passport. You have to have plan B now. You have to take the steps so that when the door finally does slam shut up in the States, you have a legal way out. So what are you going to do when that happens, or the dollar crashes, or the U.S. won't renew your passport anymore because you're on a troublemaker list or under suspicion of one thing or another? Might even be the blogs you read or post or the websites you visit. Just saying, you need a plan B, so do make it a point to line your ducks up and come down to my next Expat Wisdom Seminar. And while we're at it, let's talk a little bit about my friend Richard Martin. Most of you know Richard Martin's show, The Wake Up Call. It's one of only three radio podcast shows I listen to. Anyway, Richard Martin and his Wake Up Call show have been on PRN since the station started. But as of now, he's no longer affiliated with PRN. But of course, he'll be continuing with his twice weekly shows on Fridays and Mondays, I think. And like my show, you can stream them or download them or listen to them when they're aired live. So take this down. From now on, to get Richard Martin's show, all you have to do is go to this address. Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, that's Richard Martin's, with an S, Wake Up Call, .podbean.com. That's Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, .podbean, that's .podbean.com. Now, as far as his reasons for breaking off with PRN, people have been asking me about that too, and all I can say is for those of you who listen to him, and I recommend everybody tune in and give it a shot. Anyway, for all those years he's been doing his show live, relayed from Singapore to New York, that's Eastern Time, and being that all those years he was relaying that show live from Singapore, he had to do his show in the wee hours of the morning, because he's 12 hours ahead in Singapore. Which would make him a much better man than I am, that's for sure. But anyway, just a few weeks ago, he made the break from PRN, and now you can pick him up on Podbean.com. So if you want the solid financials and statistics of why the world's going to hell in a handbasket and why it's time to get out of the States now, do listen to Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. And since he lived in Argentina for quite a while, he has the Latin angle covered well, too.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old style.